2001 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium, Session 241, Lunchtime Laughs. Participants, Jeff Hagen, Glenn Cornett, and Matt Workman.
Joining us, and we may drag a few more stray cats in from the hall or not. Okay, thanks for joining us. The things we're supposed to remind people, first of all, this is session number 241, entitled Lunchtime Laughs. So that means you guys will all be required to laugh periodically, or we'll have to start all over again from the beginning. Next, everyone, these sessions are by admission only, so you should have a ticket for a daytime session if you didn't grab one. I'm not going to require you to hold it up or take it from you or anything, but we encourage you to go, you know, pay after the session. I don't know if we have a satisfaction guarantee with this or not. But
God,
you know,
knows if you paid.
So anyway, we'll use the honor system. Hopefully you will enjoy it and feel like it's worth paying afterwards. Let's see. The next part is about the answer question and answer period, which I don't know if we'll have one. Although they probably wouldn't mind if you engage them in deep philosophical questions after the session. There probably will be some time for that. Today we have two performers.
Special reminder.
Oh, sorry. I promised Matt that I would make this announcement. If you have cell phones or pagers, please turn them off or put them on vibrate or something else silent. Thank you. Sorry about that. All right, we have a little bit of a change from the program. We have only two performers, not three. Our musical interlude did not show up. Is there anyone who would like to volunteer for that slot? It's open in the program now. No? Okay. You had your chance. So our first performer will be Jeff Hagen. All he wants you to know about him is that he's an attorney.
Hagen.
Oh, sorry. Jeff Hagen, an attorney. That will be followed by Matt Workman, who will let you know a little bit more about him. As you read in the program, he's a writer and a performer based in Los Angeles. He performs regularly with a troupe called Monster X. They've been frequent performers at the Comedy Store, among other venues. He confides in the program that his parents wanted him to be an interpretive dancer, and it didn't work out. What did work out is our marriage. He also happens to be my husband. And I think that's about it. So we'll go ahead and get started. Join me in welcoming our performers.
I'm going to use notes occasionally, so forgive me. But David Letterman uses cue cards, so I think it's acceptable in the field. Is this working? Is this on? Can I take that one, too? Okay. Actually, I don't know which one of these I want to use. Let's keep them both on and ready. Did everybody hear that Elvis Presley owned a Book of Mormon? Did everybody hear about that in the news? Isn't that great? I can't wait to hear about the sightings, the new Elvis sightings in the Celestial Room. That's what I'm looking for. I'm guessing that Elvis can be spotted as a veil worker. You know, there's a large man, black hair. He had a very large collar on his temple jumpsuit. It was open to his navel. I'm pretty sure I saw his hips gyrate as I walked by him. It was Elvis. And I love the celebrity conversion rumors. What was the most recent one? Mike Wallace, you know, because he interviewed President Hinckley. Everybody thought, hey, he must be taking the discussions, you know. He's going to be the next Mormon. My favorite was when Ronald Reagan, back in the 80s, when he was president, I heard that he was actually baptized in a secret White House ceremony. No, it was not true. That's what the rumor was. But anyway, that he was baptized. And in a secret ceremony, because apparently it had to be kept secret for national security reasons. I guess because people would think he was insane. I don't know. I wish I could keep my membership secret. I think there'd be a lot of perks with that. You know, Bishop, I'd really like to stop drinking the beers, but people might suspect, you know? notes. Okay. Oh, church is hard. That's what my note says. Oh, I wasn't a very good missionary. My problem was, you know, it's such a hard thing to be a member of the church. I didn't want to have anybody's conversion on my conscience. So I'd always try to talk people out of it. You know, they'd say, yeah, I want to be baptized. And I'd say, listen, did you hear me when I said 10%? 10%! And I had a special discussion that I came up with myself. It was the G discussion, which stands for garments, of course. There's nothing in the discussions that prepares people for this. So I thought it was only fair to give them warning what they're going to have to wear in the future. You know, garments are, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but garments, they're, you know, I suppose they're here to stay, but I kind of think they don't really serve their purpose. I mean, at night, when I am pulling a ball of cotton the size of my fist out of my rear end, it's not my covenants I'm thinking about. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, okay, maybe not the size of my fist, but there's a ball there, okay? You know, in addition to, what I like to do is, the only way that we can really get out of wearing the garments, I've decided, is just use the one loophole that's been given us, which is the sports exception. And so what I've tried to do is just create more sporting activities in my life. For instance, my neighbor and I, now when we mow the lawn, we race. And we always have a number of balls in our front yards, which we can kick back and forth as we're pulling weeds or whatever, especially when the bishop comes by. But my favorite, I'm an attorney, as you heard, what I do is when I'm in court, I actually try to guard the opposing attorney. I put a number on my back, and then I guard him. And I found if I can kind of keep him away from the podium, then it's really hard for him to make his arguments now. And then he's got his exhibits that he's trying to enter into evidence. I slap those out of his hands. And, you know, I found that not only do I not have to wear garments, but I'm being a much more effective advocate for my client. Another hard thing I've always had a really hard time with is temple work. You know, I understand that, you know, temple work, so far, you know, baptism for the dead and all that stuff, that's okay. But all the genealogy, all the research that goes into it, I mean, think of all the time that's spent on this. Why, if the people on the other side of the veil want the work done for them so bad, why don't they do the research? I mean, they got time on their hands. They're dead. What are they doing besides the occasional haunting? You know, I mean, that's it. What else is there? I mean, why can't they just submit a list every month to President Hinckley? Say, these are the ones, you know? And no, we have to do all that for them. We do everything for them. And why can't we be baptized for, like, groups of people? Instead of, like, all these people, why can't you say, hey, I'll be baptized for those who died from the bubonic plague in France, you know? There. They're all done. Or else just for physical descriptions of people. Hey, 5'9", brown hair, lived in England in the 18th century. You know, done. And then let them worry about it on the other side. They can fight for that particular ordinance, you know? And why do we think the missionary work is going so great over there? That we have to build all these temples, we're all going crazy with the genealogy. Maybe it's like the European missions. You know, maybe they're really hard sells over there. Can you imagine? The guy dies, and the first thing he sees coming at him are the Mormon missionaries? And no! You guys just don't give up. I'm dead. You know, rest in peace. Another thing that I had an idea for is church meetings. Of course, there's too many church meetings, and they're boring, and the speakers are giving dry speeches. But what I thought is a way of making these a little bit more entertaining is if we could pipe in some nitrous oxide, you know, laughing gas, through the ventilation system. I mean, it can't be that difficult, and I'm sure it would, at the very least, make the talks a little more amusing. And you can't tell me that there's not already a lot of doping going on in the congregation anyway. And you know, the parents of like a dozen kids are out there with this beatific look on their face, listening to the speaker while their kids are like smacking them in the side of the head with their shoes and books. I mean, there's something chemical going on there. The thing is, that while there might be much that is beautiful and wonderful about self-medication, I think we're medicating the wrong people. We should be sedating the kids. We should be giving them the medicine. You can't tell me that we can't come up with a safe sedative for kids. And think of the advantages. I mean, all of a sudden, marital sex is a possibility. You know, there was this couple in my ward growing up. They had 12 kids. And I used to look at them and think, oh, man, those guys, all they think about is sex. And it's all about reproduction for them, you know. Why don't they get some hobbies or something? Then I got married, had kids, and now I realized that they had sex exactly 12 times. You know, another advantage with the sedating the kids thing is that you wouldn't have to get babysitters. You just take the sedated kids with you to the restaurant and check them in with the coat check lady, you know. There, we'll be back in an hour. You know, they come back, give her a tip if you get the right kids back and they're, you know, pretty decent shape. My wife thought that was pretty funny last night. Okay. You know, I mean, it sounds cruel. I love kids. But let's face it, kids are at their best when they're unconscious. I just think we should take advantage of that. Also, what we could do, actually, is to take advantage while the kids are sedated, is to put headphones on them and give them educational materials through these tapes. I've heard that the subliminal, stuff actually works. They've done a lot of research on that. In fact, you may remember, I don't know actually how effective it was, you may remember the campaign commercial that the Bush campaign ran. Apparently, they showed a frame of a rat, in the same frame they had the word Democrat. Do you guys remember that? Did any of you watch the commercial? I mean, I watched the commercial, and I didn't change my views. I felt the same way about the Democrats afterwards as I did before. The pink tails that they grew grossed me out. That was a little bad. But other than that, I still agree with their views. Because pink tails, the rats. The Democrats had them, Okay. Anyway, a couple of years ago, I was scheduled to do a routine here. But I was actually struck down with a terrible case of the flu. This is a true story. And I believe it was actually a smiting. It was technically a smiting. I was smitten for some material that I was going to do on Moses. Apparently he's, got friends in high places. I don't know. It wasn't really that bad. But I've modified a little bit of this Moses thing. I don't know. You may have read the scripture. You're familiar with the story where Moses is on Mount Sinai. He's talking to the burning bush. And of all the questions he can ask, God, right there at that time, he asks him what his name is. I mean, what kind of a question is that? I mean, who cares what his name is? He said, well, what should I tell him your name is when I go back? I mean, he expected to get back there and have the people say, oh, all right, Moses, well, this God guy sounds pretty great, but what's his name? I mean, they just referred to him as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob for all those years. Maybe they actually forgot his name. See, now, if I make God, I'm going to get my name out there. It's not going to be like some sort of, I'm going to be making appearances. I'm going to be a smiting God, I've decided. I'm not going to be a nice sort of God. I'll be smiting. I'll teach lessons. But I'm going to get my name out there. In fact, just before I come down, there's in a very deep, resonant voice, I'm going to say, it's Jeffy time. And then, smite, smite, smite. Then when they hear that, it's Jeffy time. Oh, they'll run. They'll run. But I think the whole becoming a God thing, I don't know if it's really like we expect it would be. I'm guessing that it's more like God with a small g, like the Greek gods, gods of specialization, the God of the sea, the God of learning, all that kind of stuff. The only problem is by the time somebody like me gets to godhood, I think all the good posts will be taken. So, I'll be the God of hand towels or, stamp collecting, just now the good ones will be gone. It's interesting. The God in the Old Testament was definitely an angry, jealous God by his own admission. That's what the scriptures say. I'm an angry, jealous God. And yet we learned that that God was Jesus. And Jesus was so nice. I mean, maybe he was venting and then he got it out of his system and he got in here and he was just really nice. Maybe he's too nice, actually. Have you heard of the Jesus Seminar? This group of scholars that's gotten together and poured over all the manuscripts that have become the New Testament to try to decide what Jesus actually did and what he actually said. And they've determined that of all the New Testament, there's just one line that Jesus actually spoke. And it was really, there's something really innocuous like, hey, boys, tomorrow morning, let's go to Capernaum. And that's it. I want to know who said the rest of his stuff. I mean, it sounds like Jesus couldn't get a word in edgewise. I mean, no wonder he didn't respond to his accusers. He probably thought, what's the point? Peter will probably just finish my sentence for me. Yeah. One thing I've learned over the years is that I've learned to accept this, is that the church is really run like a business, and it's run by successful businessmen. And so if I'm going to get anything of my ideas across, I've decided I have to present them as a business model. So, after careful thought, I've actually come up with a business model that is guaranteed to take over the world in 20 years. Okay, first step, Beehive Clothing Mills. Okay, we got to get rid of it. First of all, it's run by sadists, obviously, and they can't do a good job with that. Also, it's a cash cow. We could sell Beehive Clothing Mills to Fruit of the Loom, or Hanes, or somebody like that knows how to make a pair of underwear. And also, And you think, well, why would they want to buy it? Well, the reason why is brand loyalty. I mean, you talk about brand loyalty, their customers feel like they're going to go to hell if they don't buy them. You can't get better than that. And then, instead of just doing typical advertising, in order to sell, they have to convert people. So we have the whole missionary program is taken care of. They do all the missionary work for us, they convert people, and they've got their loyal customers. Okay, that's the first step. The next step is how to encourage the rest of us, give us a financial incentive to do missionary work. Yes, exactly. The financial incentive that I've come up with is a pyramid scheme for tithing. You convert somebody, and you get a share of their tithing that comes in. And they get some, and so you develop this tithing downline. Everybody shares. Everybody's got an incentive to go out there and do the missionary work. All right. That's the second step. Now, we've got this big pot of money, right? The church has sold Beehive Clothing. We got all these new members with all this new tithing. We don't have as many temples as we used to do because we've been baptized for, you know, groups of people. And let the dead baptize the dead. Then we've got this big pot of money. Now the next step is mergers and acquisitions. Okay, we start out small. We buy, find some backwoods congregation in the Bible Belt, and we just buy it. 1 week they're standing up, jumping up, shouting, full of the Holy Spirit, and the next week they find a new pair of underwear waiting for them. That's right. And then we move up through, you know, we buy the Unitarians and the Quakers. They're not going to put up much of a fight. What do they care? Then we move on to Methodist, Baptist, working our way up the system till the end. The grand merger with the great and abominable Catholic Church. That's right. And in a merger, there's certain undesirable elements of both religions that have to fall by the wayside. So I'm guessing at that point, garments have got to go, you know. Of course, knowing my luck, that'll be the one thing that Pope John Paul would want to keep. Say, no, if garments are off the table, the deal's off. I feel more strongly about garments than anybody here, I think. At that point, we've got all of Christendom is Mormon at this point. So what do I ask for this? Just one thing. And that is that the Catholic Church be in my downline. Thank you.
What you just saw there was my impersonation of the guy who stands up with 5 minutes left in during testimony meeting. He's going to make you go overtime. That's how it starts. The hands go here. The head goes down. The deep breath. And you and the audience go, "We ain't leaving here now." And as a matter of fact, sometimes the guy at the podium, and it usually is a guy, I'm sorry, the guy at the podium will sometimes say, "You ain't getting out of here on time." It's kind of his way of saying, "I have hijacked this sacrament meeting and we're flying to Cuba because it's open mic at the Apollo and I can do it." And so, I always like to start with an impersonation, so that was it. I'm going to switch mics because this is, you know, there's only one other joke you can do here, which is saved or damned. And then there's no other jokes here. So. It's on. I'm on. Jeff and I were commenting. This is a weird format to do comedy in. Because usually you're going to do comedy, you guys are in the dark, we're up here in the light, and instead, I feel like we should be selling Amway or real estate or something, or unlock the power of your mind and earn riches. You know, invest and become a corporation in the state of Nevada. It's perfectly legal, and free money is yours. That's what this room says to me, as opposed to stand-up comedy. So, if any of you would like to become a corporation in the state of Nevada, my name's Matt. Why don't you give me a call, and I can set something up for you. But apart from your personal financial security, let's go back to church. Because as we said before, there's testimony guy. He's going to make it, so you're there longer. Which is problematic for me, because I don't doubt that the man's testimony is valid and all that. But I kind of believe in moderation in all things, too, in that you only get blessed for 3 hours of church. There's no other blessings in hour four. It's kind of like a mission. Like, you don't get blessed, like, when you come home for still not going out with women and listening to Afterglow or whatever. There's no more blessings to be had. That's over. And so is with church. At the end of hour three, you're done. There's no more blessings. It's just you torturing yourself or testimony guy torturing you, however you want to put it. It's you're done. So, but there are other forces besides testimony man who's going to make you stay there longer, and that is unrighteous dominion chorister. We're in a ward now, and I'm terrified of our ward chorister. She put they called her, and then she just started elbowing in on the whole hour and 15 or however long it is now, hour 30 where we are. Because she put a notice, and again, I'm not making this up. She put a notice in the program that says, all verses of all hymns will be sung unless otherwise noted. And that includes, like, those dangly verses at the bottom. That, like, even the church is like, all right, this one's a little long. Let's lop the last two verses off unless, you know, the guys breaking bread are going behind. Then, all right, we'll add those then. But, you know, other than that, you ain't going to sing them. They're not going to make you sit there all day. So we're singing all of them. And so, of course, first day on the job, you can all guess. What was the hymn?
No.
Poor Wayfaring Man of Grief. That's right. They call the people. They call a new chorister. I guarantee you, I'll bet you money, next time you have a new ward chorister, week one, Poor Wayfaring Man of Grief, and you are singing all those verses. She may write some more verses and slip them into the program. Yes, I've got some more verses. Verses 11 through 15 have to do with the church, the first 2 years that the church was in Salt Lake. You know, whatever her thing is. And I'm sorry, I'm using the feminine. And I mean guys, too, but... Like, there's testimony guy and there's song practice lady. They can be men or women, but I've just assigned them genders, and this is supposed to be somewhat liberal. I'm sorry. I can't keep saying he or she. You know what I mean. I'm married now, so I love women and all that. It's not, you know. Anyhow, that's another subject. anyhow, so she's, like, muscling in on, like, she, and so but she cannot pick a hymn. It's less than five verses. That would be time to find her growing up. So we spend forever on a thing, and she does it slow, like she's military, you know. It's like, we must all press on in the world, you know. And then, so I'm scared of her, and I'm more scared of her now that I've seen her conduct, like she also conducts the choir. And those people are terrified. I don't know what she did to them to make them be in the choir. But you look at their faces when they're up there, like and she does this. Whew, wow, there. That's why you shouldn't drink Pepsi. It comes back. Lesson to all of you. Anyhow, when she conducts, she doesn't have a baton, but she makes fists at them, like she makes them stretch out their notes, like in a begins to come forth. And she makes them stop like that. And she makes a fist and she just stands there and holds it. And I don't know what kind of face she's making because her back is to me. But the people in the choir are like, don't hurt me. I'll come back next week. Just don't hurt me. It's this is what the church is in California these days. And I'm a little scared because now we're in the married ward. I had been in the singles ward. Now we're in the married ward. And people used to be sometimes people from the married ward would come to the singles ward. To talk to the single people like they're Red Cross workers. And you, the single guy, like your house has just been wrecked in a mudslide and they're going to minister to you. Like, oh, we know how rough it is. You know, you're having a blast. You know, it's like, and we just want to know that
we feel for the special single people, and that we don't call you special interest anymore because that sounds like a retarded people's group. And we maybe don't think of you that way. So now I'm in the ward with the people that have to go to the singles ward and do that. And then there's the home, there's homemaking projects that they do. And I have actually written down a few, because this is some serious stuff. I don't know if you know what's being done. And I'm sort of here to shed some light. Because I have I've collected these honest-to-goodness true food storage projects. They were on a kick a little while back. Don't just store the food. Eat it every now and then. Like, go down into the basement, pull some of that crap up, and fix dinner. And naturally, you don't want to eat whatever it is, so the key is to try to turn it into something else. And I swear to you, I'm not making this up. They had a recipe, and I know somebody whose mom did this to her. Pineapple made out of zucchini. Like, you chop the zucchini up into, like, little cubes, and you soak it in pineapple juice, and then feed it to people you claim to love. You know? It's fruit! Eat it! And again, this is true. I can't think this sick. I'm a little warped, but I'm not. That's Marquis de Sade stuff there. And then there's simulated fruit cake, which is done. And I'll just admit I'm stealing the joke that comes with this from my wife Julie. So hats off to you. We theorized was a product of the Depression. Where you take, like, candied fruits, like, you know, little candied cherries and candied whatever, put them in a pan, then take a can of vanilla frosting, dump it in the pan, mix it around, and freeze it. And we figured it was a product of not a product of the Great Depression, but a product of the clinical depression that some Relief Society president had. No one cares what I cook. No one eats the fruitcake. Here, put it in the freezer. Here's some frosting. Thanks, Julie. That was good. but the worst of all, and it is, I understand this is like lunchtime laughs. Is there anybody still eating? Okay, if you have any food, put it down. Because somebody told me this while I was eating, and I couldn't. I had lost my appetite. And again, I swear this is true. I swear I know somebody who was served this food item. It is chocolate cream pie made with refried beans. A God who loves his children set up a church, and that church is feeding them refried bean chocolate pie. You take the beans and put, like, sugar and cocoa in it, mix it around, put it in a pan. Surprise! It's dessert. I mean, it's like, everyone's saying, you know, we had the talk like, oh, where is our Rembrandt? Where is our Shakespeare? No, where is our Julia Child? Like, just let's get first things first. Or at least on the other, like, They're sending police down to snatch up the kids of polygamists for whatever they're enduring. Snatch up the kids that have to eat this pie. Protect them from that. I'm much more worried about what that does to the psyche than having eight moms or whatever. That's nothing. I could never trust another human being again if my mom gave me that. Sobering thoughts, indeed. I hope... Are they taping this session? I want to relive these moments. Anyhow. I used to have a lot of jokes about being a single Mormon, because there's not much more pathetic than that, and therefore it's a fertile source of humor. However, then I got married and I lost all that material. It's a shame, because it's good stuff. But it doesn't work anymore. You can't whine about being single if you're not. So instead I'm going to whine about being married. No, I'm not whining about me, but the process. I just got married a couple months ago, and this is not about you, Sherry, by the way. but I'll tell you right now, I have never, like,
Is there anybody, I'm just going to ask a question, and this kind of goes back to the Amway thing a little bit. Is there anybody in here who needs some crystal? If you do, contact me afterwards. I have a warehouse full of this stuff now. I have never, in my 32 years, owned or utilized a piece of crystal, ever. Not for anything. And now I got rooms and rooms and rooms of it. I got crystal platters. And when I say I mean we. Because married people are a team. It's always we. But in the context of this, it's easier to say I, because it sounds like the royal we when I'm here. So understand that I actually, it's like the unroyal I. Or, you understand, I'm a progressive man, but in this case, I have all the crystal I could ever stand for. I have candle holders, bowls. There, we have like an Easter basket, it looks like. A crystal Easter basket. We're not going to be able to use that for another 50 years until we're like the old grandparent types, and then we have to put that nasty tasting candy in it. And if you pick one up, all the candy comes up. We already have it. We've got that now, but where do we put it for the next 50 years until we're 80-year-old grandparents? This is a problem. So if you guys need crystal, if you guys need any kind of serving apparatus, really, we cutting boards, we're selling, and we're selling cheap. So come on down to Curtis and Workman's Married People Warehouse. I want to do some response. This is a pseudo academic type of symposium. So, a couple of comments on things. One, subliminal I forgot. I had something about the subliminal advertising thing that was really that dovetailed beautifully with what you said, but it slipped my mind. But going on to Elvis sightings, and this is true. In the there's a guy. I perform at the Troupe in Los Angeles, and we do a lot of shows at the Comedy Store. And then there's a guy that was working together a bit as an Elvis impersonator, and he had this white jumpsuit on. And I'm sitting in the audience with another friend of mine who's Mormon as well, and it was a jumpsuit with big bell bottoms and a lapel that came out to here, and belt loops that were about here. And we looked at him like, oh my gosh, it's a baptismal jumpsuit. So, there's an Elvis impersonator who is wearing a baptismal jumpsuit. So, the prophecies are happening. These are the days, guys. It's happening. And, gosh, for the life of me, I can't remember the subliminal advertising thing. It was brilliant. There was a lot of humor there. But, just a treasure trove of it. But, I'll finish up on this because it's a brilliant bit I just came up with while in the lobby, which is this. How many are from Utah? Right here. Okay, about 2/3, 3/5 maybe. Why not? I'm not from here, and so they have a display over there with the things to do while you're in Utah, like little brochures. For instance, there's Taffy Town. Home of Tug and Stretch. Let Tug and Stretch give you a multimedia presentation showing how the world's finest taffy is made. Right here. It's right on 800 South. For those wanting to travel a little further afield, there's the Museum of the Mountain Man. Right here. He's in Wyoming. It houses exhibits on the fur trade, which you can see over here. Western Expansion, Plains Indians, and Early Settlement in the History of Western Wyoming. And finally, for those of you seeking the entire Utah, or the pinnacle Utah experience, as evidenced by the tourism display just down the hall, Schleppers. This is what you need to see. It's Western wear. And one of the great rules of comedy is leave on a big laugh. The second rule of comedy is just leave. So I will do that. That's my time. Thank you very much for coming out.